effective team communication. I'd say every coach I talk to wants their team to get better at communicating. But how do we get our teams to not just talk more? Because sometimes talking just on the field of the court can just be noise. But how do we get them to communicate in a way that is purposeful, that is received well and understood by their teammates, and drives the behaviors we want to see within our program? We can't just tell our athletes to communicate or to just be better at communicating. We have to teach them. We have to develop those skills. And in today's episode, we're back with Holly Durbel from UMass Field Hockey. Nate, Betsy, and Holly unpack how to coach your more direct communicators to have greater success with their teammates. They talk about how an elevated way to use film to practice feedback. They discuss a language shift to make feedback a more positive experience for your team, how to frame your questions for better conversations, and lastly, examples of questions for your players to consider. Welcome to the Coaching Culture Podcast, the podcast to help you grow as a leader and build a better culture. My name is JP Nurbin, and I'm joined by my friends and co-hosts, Nate Sanderson and Betsy Butterick, who lead this interview today. In addition to this podcast, I'm the founder of TOC, which supports leaders and their teams to build extraordinary cultures through one-on-one coaching, consulting, online training, and speaking. To learn more, I recommend starting with these three steps. Read the Culture System, subscribe to the TOC newsletter, and get trained through our Transformational Coaching and Culture Certification. You can do all of these things and learn more about TOC at tocculture.com. To learn more about Betsy Butterick and her work as a leadership coach, go to betsybutterick.com.
So Holly, you've talked about just the importance of honesty, that your players know that you're coming from a place of their best interests at heart, and essentially that they're going to get the truth from you when they ask questions or when they ask for more. Quite frankly, we just finished up a round of exit interviews here at following our season. And one of the things that I was most pleased to hear was just that players appreciated that they knew they were going to get an honest assessment or honest feedback, positively or negatively. And I think sometimes that's lost on us as coaches, is how much players crave that, especially players that are trying to get better. One of the places I think that becomes challenging for coaches along the same lines is trying to get our players to be able to be comfortable being honest with each other. And, you know, when there are issues, when there are conflicts, whether that's on the field or off the field, I don't necessarily want to be involved in every conversation that requires, you know, some honesty and some hard truth. How do you try to coach your players and your leaders to be able to grow in that together, peer to peer?
Good question. That's a tough question. Only because this week or last week we had a conversation about it between each other, and I think we're getting to the point where we actually want the girls to be able to coach each other on the pitch and use certain language all the time on the pitch, but also hold each other accountable for whatever goes on, because at this level we don't hear about everything, and neither do we want to hear about everything. And I think it's up to them to, in a good culture, for them to be able to talk about it and sort it out for themselves. I mean, I know they had a team meeting just last week about standards and what was going on. And I think we don't run the ship as, you know, hard line. And sometimes we're sort of like, oh, we've been a bit soft on this lot, you know. But I think the key for our girls in terms of growth is that, you know, they do need to be able to say things to each other. And I do think that girls are not very good at that. I don't think girls are the best at being able to tell each other when there's an issue. And I think, you know, there are going to be moments where on the pitch someone might just take something you say personally and not talk to you after the game. Not that we would see it, but it wouldn't surprise me if there were moments in practice where someone goes away and is a bit offended by something someone said. I think it serves as a reminder with the fact that we want them to be honest with us, but they also want to be honest with each other in order to gain honesty back. I think truthfully, you could say it a million times, but it isn't always going to be workable for some. Some don't have that ability to do it, and it makes them uncomfortable. And I think we should respect that. We can create a culture. And I think we can push people in terms of questioning. So when we're questioning in a big group, I often find that you can pick out people that perhaps wouldn't volunteer that information outwardly. And I think just trying to gradually build them up so that they feel comfortable. We've been doing things where we've been making a sole person a captain that probably wouldn't have those conversations normally, and trying to build their confidence on the pitch where they're most comfortable, so that maybe then they could build that off the pitch too. But to be honest, we're not massively in control of how that culture develops off the pitch. And I think what we've had is Barb's done a great job of having 5 years nearly of, you know, building from the bottom up. And now luckily we're in a place where we've got an amazing team culture. But there's always growth in terms of honesty. And I think that definitely is a weak link for girls sport in general. And having your feelings hurt. And it's tough. They have to sort of build this shield around them where they get told one thing at one point and then they go off the field. And our goalkeeper, to be fair, is very good at being honest. And she will tell you. She will tell you. And her workable area is, how do I rein that in and say it in a better way? Because I don't want everyone to be offended by me, but you still need to know that you're not defending properly, or you're, you know, not scoring enough goals, or whatever she wants to say. And I think that there's that middle ground, and she's doing an amazing job of, you know, she's done leadership course, she's tried everything to get to that point, but we don't want to lose that element of what she's doing, because we want the girls to sort of rise up and not be offended. So yeah, it's that balancing act between the two, isn't it?
Holly, great answer. And I'm thinking, as you're talking about some of the examples that I've seen in real time, even standing next to you on the sideline a few weeks ago, and you were talking to one of the backs who had sent the ball up the sideline, but you were asking the back what she needed to tell the player that had just received the ball. You know, what does she need to hear? Yeah. So in real time, you're asking them or inviting them to give that kind of feedback. And then something else you mentioned a moment ago, in the huddle when you're debriefing and you have one of your more vocal athletes say something that they observed in the last drill, you're very skillful at saying, like, right, so let's get specific, and then pivoting, and I'm going to ask this person, so how can we work on that in the next build, right? So you're taking what's theirs, and then you're inviting or working on the ability of different individuals to speak and add their voice to the collective. Thinking about when we talk about accountability, it's not only the holding accountable, but it's the ability to be held accountable.
Yeah.
What advice do you have for players, or let's say for coaches, on how to help their team get better at receiving feedback from teammates?
I think our thing with, like, your example there was just, I think I fed the information back to the right half or the right mid. And I turned to the centre back and said, why am I delivering that information? It should be you. And she looked at me and was like, fair, you know, it should be. And the next thing was just keeping that going constantly. So I think we went into a team talk after that and I said, communication better, but still not good enough. And I think at that point, I think we went back into it and I still didn't think it was good enough. And I think I tasked them then with, every time you pass the ball, you need to feed information to the person that's receiving the ball. Not to the point where we want it to be excessive, but it needs to become comfortable so that they can do it. And there's some that will always be more comfortable than others. But I think whenever you're coaching, I think trying to manipulate the situation to actually get something out of it really specific. You know, when you're training, you know, you might have a set goal and those goals are really clear and you progress through those drills so obviously that by the end of it, they can achieve that skill. But I feel like in terms of coaching and communication, you can do exactly the same. You just have to be more purposeful in the way that you manipulate your drills or your key feedback, rather than over. I mean, that example specifically, that was what we wanted to get out of it, in my opinion, was we needed to be better at communication or the language we use. And so at that point, the rest of it didn't matter. It didn't matter how they performed. It was just about really being specific about, have I given them a task that they can complete in terms of their communication? And I think at the time I probably didn't. I just said, you need to be better at communicating. And that doesn't really mean anything. And it doesn't task them with anything. And it doesn't, you know, the shy ones are still going to shy away. So yeah, being really specific about it, you pass the ball, give that person some feedback of information or off the ball, and a really specific example. So yeah, I think that was from that point of view how I would do it. We've got a lot of players in our team from different countries. So from that side of it, we're also looking at the language we use when we play, because everybody's got different ideas of what actually things mean, and things are coming to fruition that actually some of these kids don't understand what the other person's saying. And it means something completely different in their country. So we have to get to a point where all these girls can communicate, be honest. And back to those team talks where, you know, you've got someone that's dead honest. It's the skills that you can then do to bring that and make it a positive for her when she's trying to deliver that to everybody else, if that makes sense. So say she's made a comment and you're thinking, oh gosh, this isn't going to go down so well. But taking bits of it and making it positive and trying to help that in the team talk so that the girls understand that she's not doing it to be negative. She's doing it in the best way possible.
And I have a coaching question for both of you, since you are both actively coaching. And I know, Nate, you just finished a season. Holly, you're in the spring bit of your season. Mm-hmm. Question relates to a comment you just made that I remember thinking was very important when I was observing. I hear coaches often say, we need to talk. We need to talk, right? And yet, when you were talking to the team, you said, we need to, every time you pass the ball, you need to give someone information. And I remember you and I were crossing the field and we were having a conversation around part of the culture that you all have developed, and something you're very intentional about, is you never want the players who are on the field or on the sideline telling the person with the ball what decision to make. Mm-hmm. What you do want is the people that have the vision and the means to be able to provide the best quality information for the person with the ball to make the best decision given your standards and principles. Mm-hmm. So my question for both of you, Nate and Holly, as you're actively coaching, when you talk to your team about talking, when you talk to your team about giving information, what does that look like for both of you in your teams and within your cultures? How do you teach them what information is helpful?
Well, I'll take a stab at that first. You know, for us, a lot of that comes back to the questioning that we talked about before, and we do that off the court. So a lot of, I think a place where I've been growing and our team has been growing is just in the film room. Instead of doing a great presentation on our upcoming opponent or, you know, dissertation on all the things we did wrong in our last game, I really am starting to learn how to use film better to present questions and to present problems and then ask, how do we solve this? How would we? So, for example, one thing that we did quite a bit differently this year is when we would prepare for a team, we run all zone defense. So let's say, you know, we're looking at somebody's zone offense. And so we pull it from another game where they've been playing zone, obviously, and we would show, you know, three or four clips of their offense and then just ask, how would we guard this differently than the team that we're watching? And so if that team makes a mistake, or if that team fails to communicate, or if that team, you know, doesn't call out a screen or a cutter or something like that becomes obvious, but it's not at the expense of us. Like, I'm not calling out Susie, who's sitting next to me. We're just looking at the bottom forward from this other team and what was clearly missing, right? And so then that allows us to ask, well, if you're in the top of the zone or you're in the front of the press, then what information do you need? When do you need it? And who, you know, who can give it to her in the right time, right? So I think by sterilizing it in that way, we've sort of created this opportunity that it's all still in the context of our systems, but it's not necessarily in real time, and it doesn't trigger, you know, defense mechanisms, because we're not really talking about us necessarily in those preparations. Does that make sense?
It not only makes sense, Nate, I think it speaks to, and I was thinking as you were talking, Holly, we talked about how Nate recently finished his season. Nate's team is also brilliant. They are very good. And again, in your answer, Nate, I'm hoping that our listeners are understanding why. Not only does it make sense, you mentioned sterilizing. And I was thinking something similar when Holly, you said information in place of feedback. Some people are triggered simply by the word feedback. It's negative. It's going to be personal, right? It's an attack on me, my knowledge, my skills, my abilities, whatever. When it's information, then it becomes something that's much more free-flowing. Nate, you're enabling your team to practice it before they need it, and you've depersonalized it because it's not you. It's talking about this hypothetical, what would we do in this situation? And if we're critiquing, we're critiquing somebody else's team, not yet ours. But you're giving them reps before they're needed in a safe environment to be able to execute at a high level. So I think that's fantastic, and thank you for sharing. Holly, how do you help players understand what information is valuable and helpful without teetering into, you know, making a decision for the person that has the ball?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with Nate in a lot of respects. And I think I resonate with Nate in the fact that he's a teacher as well. And I think what gets lost for me, I might be different here, but what does get lost for me is the bigger picture in high school. I mean, these guys are going to go off and have a completely different coach at a university, and they're going to want to play different ways and different I don't know basketball very well, but you know, different presses or different structures, or you know, and different set plays. And I think with questioning, if you've got that general understanding and they know how to converse with their coach, they're going to be better off for it. So I agree with the questioning side. I think we're really purposeful in the way we train that communication. And I think there's been times where I've even asked myself the question, what does pressure even mean? Like, if my goalkeeper is shouting pressure, what does that actually mean? And it was a recent conversation I said to her, how could you change that language that you've just used to actually get out of this situation what you want? Because pressure in the grand scheme of things could just means bam, like go. And then from a hockey point of view, we're also telling our defenders, stay in the play, don't dive in. Stay in that game, don't go all out, don't start running your stick up there and getting beat. So actually, what we don't want to shout is pressure, because for most of these girls, pressure means whoom. So we had that conversation and she said, I should have said, stay in it, or, you know, defend your left foot. And I said, well, that's more specific. And now that information is really clear and obvious as to what that defender needs to do. So that's how specific we've been recently. And I think in a team talk recently, they were like, we need to be more composed and all, using language like that. And I've, you know, to me, composed means calm, but not necessarily means that for everybody else. And what does that mean when I'm on the ball and I've got my head down and I've got three players around me? It's quite difficult to be composed in that situation. So it's just trying to expand the language that they're using so that they can coach. And I think, I don't know if Nate experiences this in basketball, but we have the American way here, which is very different to England, is the girls on the sideline all stand with the coaches and they scream the whole game and they cheer the whole game. And, you know, they turn the ball over and say, forwards 1v1 with the goalie. And all you can hear is this screaming. And I'm like, oh my God, you know, and I'm thinking to myself, if I'm the player now, I'm thinking, oh my gosh, suddenly I can't be composed because I've got everybody shouting. I've got my coaches shouting, go around the keeper. Or I've got everybody screaming and I can't hear anyone and I can't have any time to think. And it's been trying to get to that point where we don't do that so that the player can actually have the thought processes of what is my principle here? Going back all these times, I've trained this over and over again, so it becomes like a habit or a muscle memory. What do I need to do here? And then it's just come down to making your decision for you rather than telling them exactly what they need to do constantly. I think that helps train the coaching side of it from our players.
And I'd add two other things too, Betsy. I think, you know, one thing that Holly's alluding to here is that common language, and she's obviously, you know, faced with different challenges when you're talking about players that literally speak different languages. But a lot of times, you know, I don't care necessarily what we call particular actions or coverages or, you know, whatever it might be. I just want to make sure that we're all describing the same thing, right? And so even in our, you know, again, our film sessions are down on the floor, we might ask, I might start using a word. Does that word make sense? Do you want to call it something else? You know, and so making sure that we're in agreement and understanding on what our words mean, number one. And I think, you know, number two, another challenge for players that can't seem to find their voice, or they don't speak up, or they won't, you know, bottom of the zone, they're the ones that can see and they still don't say anything. We've done like silly things with them. Like I remember one in our zone, the bottom left-hand girl can see the most, right? So she's the one that's got to be talking the most. We had our smartest kid down there on our team, and she just wasn't very vocal. So we had a practice segment where I literally had her hold a microphone that was tied into the speakers in the gym, and she was the only one that was allowed to talk into the microphone while she's out playing defense with one arm. And just like, it's a silly thing, right? And it made her really uncomfortable. And we let her pass the baton on a little bit here and there. But the idea was, you know, if you're not going to do it, like, we're just not going to be as good as what we could be, right? And so whether it's that, or we played telephone games where, you know, we pick three of the quieter kids to lead a group into a drill or a game, and I just give them the instructions, and then they have to go out and communicate it to their teams. And we've also done things where we don't let them talk at all, like, or you let one team play against it that can talk against a team that cannot, just to, again, lean into this idea that communication is so important, you know, and they, all of a sudden they can see the advantage in live play. That gives me a little bit more leverage, right, when we're trying to get them to talk more.
I love it. And those are great tips for coaches on how do I work with my quieter kids? How do I work with, you know, my team really understanding the importance of communication, not just for, you know, quality play, but really as a competitive advantage. I want to start to wrap this up. And so I'm curious for both of you in this shared culture of coaches as educators. And thank you for the way that you both show up as teachers in sport. Tell me, if you will, let's close on this note. What is a question or two that you feel are very powerful? Either questions you've been asked personally that have helped you grow or develop as a coach, or questions that you've asked athletes that you felt have led to really meaningful conversation?
Rather than say a specific question and something might come to my brain, I think the most important thing that I think I've taken through is like, what is your first word when you ask a question? Is it a how? Is it a what? Is it a why? And how you frame your questioning leads to the sort of answer that you're going to get in return. So how you frame your questioning is going to be whether you get quite a closed question, a closed answer back, or are you going to spark a discussion where you're then going to have a conversation, you're going to spark maybe a bit of a debate, or you're going to build that relationship again, or have you that, yeah, I think that's where I would go with it, is thinking more about how you can engage in a conversation from a small question and how you start and finish that question, maybe rather than a specific question. But while Nate's speaking, I might think of one, you never know.
You know, Betsy, there's a few that we've kind of, I think, gravitated toward this year, and they come up in different contexts. I'm going to give you three quick examples here. You know, one that we've found ourselves using with players when it comes to tactics and strategies. For example, we played a game where if you turn the ball over, you, like hockey sub, you run over to one of the coaches on the sideline, you tag in somebody else who goes in for you. And then we have a quick discussion about just what would you do differently. So we saw that pass didn't work. That decision wasn't great. You know, what would you do differently? And sometimes they have a good answer right away. And sometimes it kind of leads us to the second thing, is I think a lot of times when it comes to decision making on the court in particular, it's an issue of perception. Like, they just didn't see something, right? And so that's another question we've used a lot. What did you not see? Or again, in film, what did this player here, whether it's our team or somebody else, what did they not see? And that has really, I think, just opened up our ability to talk more about, you know, vision and trying to survey the court better and all those kind of things. So what did you not see? What would you do differently? When it comes to kind of our group conversations, this is a little thing, but, you know, Holly talked about some of the differences coaching girls, and I've never coached boys, so I don't know what this would, you know, how this would go over in a classroom full of boys. But we've started all of our film sessions this year, before we looked ahead at our opponent or looked back at the night before, with just, what are you most proud of from last night's game? And we have them talk about that in groups of two or three, because I think it's so easy for, this is probably true for kids these days, it's true for me too, like, we look at the negative things, we remember the missed shots and the turnovers, and, you know, maybe we get an earful from mom or dad, or, you know, my kids tell me, coach, why are you doing this? You know, like there's so many critics out there, right? And we're not in the habit of, one, just looking for the positive things, and two, it's almost taboo, especially for girls, I think, to be able to vocalize and say, I'm really proud of my effort last night. I was really proud of making that three. You know, that almost becomes uncomfortable for them. But I think it's so important, right, to build our confidence and to be able to celebrate each other. And whether those celebrations are individual or collective, that's just was really good for our room. You know, is just starting with what are you most proud of? And then here's the last one I'll share with you is I just stumbled into this right at the end of our season, probably the last like 6 or 8 games of the season for us. And that is, so let's say we played, I'll tell you where this started. We played the number one team in the state on a Friday night, and we lost on a 3-pointer at the buzzer. And it was at our place, and like it was devastating, right? And I wanted to be really deliberate about how that game was going to be framed before we played another game. And I didn't really know where everybody was at, and I didn't really have an opportunity to grab everybody individually coming out of the locker room. You know, everybody's trying to go their own way. And so what I did was, after we kind of got everybody out of there, I just texted everybody and I said individually, and I said, hey, Betsy, shoot me 2 thoughts about tonight before we get to practice tomorrow. And that's it. Just leave it open ended, whatever's on your mind, you know, whether it's about the team or the game or our opponent or us or themselves, just let it be open. And then when we get to practice the next day, we're getting basketballs out, kids are shooting around, I'm following up with every one of those kids just real quickly, either reframing a little bit of maybe their mistakes, right? Or adding to something perhaps that they alluded to, but maybe I've got a little more perspective after watching the film. But it really created this ongoing conversation, like 12 individual conversations, very quick, you know, that they had time to think about it. It wasn't like grabbing them outside the locker room and shaking them for an answer. You know, they had 24 hours to come up with something. And I was really surprised at the depth of their reflection and the accuracy of just kind of them thinking back through what happens. And it was great. Like I said, we only did it the last 6 or 8 games of the year, but it's definitely something that I want to pick up with and continue next season.
Anything else, Holly, that you want to touch on or Nate, that you want to ask?
Oh, I mean, I was just going to say, like, sometimes we finish our, like when I finish a drill with the girls, like, I'll just say to them, like, how do you think that went? And sometimes, like, even when you're thinking to yourself, oh, I really want to tell them, I really want to add, I really want to tell you, you need to do this, you need to do this. But it just adds that level of communication back into it and questioning for themselves. And sometimes they will just stand there for a little bit and, like, who's going to go first? And what we've seen as we've grown through is, like, the freshmen have started to start the conversation rather than be the last or be pulled into the conversation. And I think it's a good method to start a conversation with just how did that go? And ask for their opinion before you go, actually, this is what I saw. And just, I'm really gauging that from them. And to be honest, another thing that has worked really well for me, and this comes down probably from my teaching, is when I do a presentation with the girls, I don't just feed like loads of words and loads of information. I actually try and get them to give me the information rather than me tell them. So I'll say, I'll put pictures up, for example, and I'm hoping that if they get what we're talking about, they should understand what the game is. So it's like a Pictionary game. So we've been talking last year about passing a ball and connecting with a player and passing it quickly, rather than second guessing yourself, just go and do it. So we use the word just do it. So I used a Nike tick, for example, in the presentation, and they had to come up with what is that? And then one of them was like, oh, guys, just do it. And I was like, correct. And then we move forward and they get it. And then hopefully they get those key bits of information so that they're doing the work and they're thinking, rather than me just say, this is what we're going to do, bullet point, bullet point, bullet point, bullet point. So yeah, those were the two things that sprung to mind.
This is fantastic, and it really is such a joy for me to listen to both of you, both I think incredible coaches who value teaching. And there's so many great quotes from education that come to mind for me, and listening to both of you speak tonight, one that's hitting home is that quote that says, a great teacher tells you where to look but not what to see. And in so much of our conversation, to hear how you're intentional through questioning of training athletes' minds and their bodies and their skills, but also their vision, to teach them to see the game differently so that they can make better decisions. And I want to thank you both for that.
Thank you very much for having us.
You're welcome. Thanks so much for being on, Holly. Great to chat with you.
What a fantastic conversation with Holly, Nate, and Betsy. Definitely challenge a few coaches out there and their current methods of teaching, of coaching. Here's what I would leave all our listeners with. This is a process. Becoming a more effective coach teacher and helping your team to grow in this communication is not something you just do overnight. It's not something you just start doing and are good at tomorrow. It's a skill, and skills take time to develop in us as coaches. I remember recently in a coaching call with a client of mine who's coached for over 30 years as a head coach at the Division I level. This coach was frustrated because she just kept falling back to the habit of just barking at her players or just telling them what to do. She wanted to be better at asking questions. And I just reminded her, this is a process. This is something you have to continuously work at and some things you have to untrain. So just like we want our athletes to do work at developing their skills, so do we as coaches. We need to work to develop our own skills. Thanks for listening into the Coaching Culture Podcast. If you enjoyed today's episode, please share it with other coaches and friends out there. Take time to leave us a review wherever you listen to podcasts. And be sure to subscribe to the TOC newsletter so you don't miss the notes to this and every episode.